From WXXI News, I'm Evan Dawson, and this is Connections. Our connection for this hour will be made on Tuesday, November 4th. That's Election Day. For Governor Andrew Cuomo, he hopes it will be a day providing a mandate from voters, a large and comfortable margin of victory over Republican Rob Astorino. But Cuomo's opponents warn that he's at risk from both his left and right. From his left, they say that Common Core will reduce Cuomo's support among Democrats. From his right, they say the SAFE Act has galvanized conservatives who might otherwise have stayed home on Election Day. One of the most strident opponents of the SAFE Act is Assemblyman Bill Nojay. Yesterday, we spent an hour with Democrat Joe Morelli. Today, we extend the courtesy to Republican Bill Nojay. And Bill, it's nice to have you in studio.
Thank you for having me, Evan.
All right. Well, first of all, there's a lot to get to on budget, SAFE Act, et cetera. We've seen some questions on Twitter about whether the SAFE Act was defunded in the budget. And I know you jumped right in there to say no.
No. No, it was not defunded. In fact, they rolled over almost $20 million from last year that the governor did not spend for whatever reason. So it's a fully funded bill. The governor's got a lot of money to put whatever resources he wants into it. It is notable that he has not actually sort of pretending he's Barack Obama and that he actually has not implemented and he's allowed deadlines to slide on it, whether for political reasons or because the databases and so on are just not ready. We don't know. He hasn't bothered to tell anybody in the legislature. But there's certainly enough money there to enforce it if he wants to.
You have consistently warned that sheriffs are not only not on board with the SAFE Act, but they're essentially not enforcing it. Is that still the case from what you're hearing?
Sheriffs are law enforcement professionals. They're accountable to the people that elected them in every county. And almost universally across upstate New York, the sheriffs have said this law has nothing to do with preventing violence or tragedy. It has everything to do with politics. And their message is essentially, we're not in the politics business. We're in the law enforcement business. So we've got higher priorities than to pursue some political agenda that the governor has for whatever reason.
Now, you're talking about on the political side, the elected lawmaker side. Do you think it's possible that some New Yorkers who support the SAFE Act don't do it for political reasons, that they think this is a good way to make the state safer?
The people that support the SAFE Act out of a genuine concern about the safety of school children or preventing crime or violence are people who do not understand firearms or mental illness. The SAFE Act is very much like Obamacare. The same way that Obamacare was written almost wholly without the involvement of doctors, the SAFE Act was drafted without the involvement of law enforcement professionals or mental health professionals. And yet, those are the folks that are most directly impacted. It would be nice, whether in Washington or in Albany, if before we draft and pass laws, first we actually read them before we voted upon them, which neither in the case of Obamacare or the SAFE Act happened. Nobody in Albany actually read the SAFE Act.
You're not going to make me spend time in Obamacare this hour, are you?
No, I'm saying that there are remarkable parallels between the two. And to the extent that people don't understand the SAFE Act, they can reference what happened in the passage of Obamacare. In the case of the SAFE Act, law enforcement professionals were left out of the discussion. Mental health professionals were left out. In fact, not to keep referencing the Obama, but the Obama administration has said they will not comply with the SAFE Act's mental health reporting requirements. So it's not just upstate sheriffs. It's not just other law enforcement professionals. It's not just our county clerks and ordinary citizens. Even the federal government is refusing to comply with the SAFE Act because it's fundamentally not enforceable.
When we last spoke, it was about 6 weeks ago, and you had predicted that you had some comments about what would happen by April 15th or not happen. You also talked about the fact that with the sheriffs not on board with this, the governor was putting state police in a bad position of having to decide what to enforce. I want to listen to first what you said 6 weeks ago. Then yesterday, Joe Morelli had the chance to respond to that. So we're going to hear first your comments from 6 weeks ago, then Assemblyman Morelli, and I'll get your take on that. Let's listen.
The choice about whether to send troopers out into the field, knocking on doors, going to gun clubs and inspecting serial numbers and so on, that's going to be the governor's choice. And the governor will put the state troopers on a collision course with the citizenry. The rank-and-file state troopers want absolutely nothing to do with it. And they've sent that message up the ladder very clearly through their union heads, who were originally in bed with the governor on this, but got a lot of pushback from the rank-and-file. And the governor knows that if there is confrontation and there is blood, it will be on his hands. And it's a heady decision that he's going to have to make. How serious is he about enforcing this law?
But you're talking about potential blood on hands, and you invoke Kiev. I mean, is that a little hyperbolic, or do you really feel that strongly about this?
No, we've got a long history in this country Our country was born of revolution. We are a country that has historically told the citizens that you have certain rights. They are God-given rights. And in this case, it's very clear. Look, do the math. There are there are over a million of these firearms, according to the governor's own numbers, estimates by the state police. My prediction is that by April 15th, less than one-tenth of that number will be registered.
All right, Joe. What do you think?
I think that, with all due respect to Bill Nogi, I think he's trying to be relevant, so he says the most outrageous things that he can say. He's a radio talk show host. I think he's trying to get people to tune in. Frankly, I think, I hate to say this, but no one takes him seriously in Albany or pays attention to him. It's because he says ridiculous things. We're not going to have bloodshed in the streets. This is not the 18th century. We don't have muskets. The SAFE Act actually is pretty popular when it's polled.
All right. So there's Joe Morelli responding. I want your take on what he said there, Bill. I mean, that's a very tough take from him, and he's saying that what you're saying is so hyperbolic as to be almost silly, that we're not going to have bloodshed over this.
Well, look, Joe Morelli is governor's guy in Rochester. He's got to take that position. He's also Sheldon Silver's guy on the floor of the state assembly, so he does what Sheldon Silver tells him to do. There's a dynamic to politics in Albany that resulted in the SAFE Act. It's largely driven by New York City politics. Right now, we've got every statewide elected leader in Albany that grew up within 20 miles of each other in New York City. So you're going to have a certain political culture that drives Albany decision-making and Albany legislation. Joe Morelli is from upstate New York, as the majority leaders of the assembly typically have been. But on the other hand, he doesn't have a whole lot of leeway about what he does on the floor. So you've got to take, I think, both sides for what they are. I'm representing the folks in my district. I've got 11 gun clubs. You talk to rural lawmakers all across upstate New York, they're going to say pretty much what I have said. I don't think that what I'm saying is particularly noteworthy in the context of what's being said all across the rest of the state.
If you talk about blood, though, it is, isn't it? I mean, you really think we're going to see bloodshed? Or if you talk about bloodshed and revolution— I mean,
well,
there are some who will say you're inciting it.
Well, hold on now. Let me give you an example. Last year, we had 10,000 people in Albany on February 28, 2013, protesting the SAFE Act. There was planned, up until the weekend before that, a counter demonstration by SEIU, which is effectively the Socialist Party of America, masquerading as a labor union, that was orchestrated by Andrew Cuomo. Andrew Cuomo wanted a counter-demonstration at the same time, in the same place, the same park in Albany. Why? To promote and encourage confrontation. That was the only reason Andrew Cuomo picked up the phone and called his friends with SEIU in New York City to get the counter-demonstrations there. I said on radio to Fred Dicker, to others in the Albany news market, that if there is blood at that confrontation that the governor is orchestrating, it'll be on the governor's hands. You know what? Within 48 hours, that SEIU confrontation was called off. They brought their signs down from the websites. The buses were canceled. The governor does pay attention to this stuff, and he knows that when you incite citizens against their own government, good things almost never happen. In fact, to the contrary, bad things almost always happen. So it's not Bill Nogi's rhetoric. It's the rhetoric being employed across all of upstate New York. Listen to the law enforcement professionals. Listen to the sheriffs. Listen to the rank-and-file state troopers. Listen to the county clerks. They want nothing to do with this law because they know it's a purely political law that has nothing to do with preventing violence or tragedy.
Bill Nogi, Assemblyman, is in studio. And, Bill, you've done something that no one's ever done on this program. We have 5 phone lines lit up, and I haven't even given the number. And so we're going to be getting to those calls in a moment. But I want to hit a couple of points. So if you're on the phone, hang there. I want to hit a couple of points there. Joe Morelli said that, points out that the polling shows the SAFE Act is popular. And so, latest polling from August, Quinnipiac, 63% of New Yorkers support the SAFE Act, 33% oppose it, 55% of Republicans support it, 83% of Democrats oppose it. 2 weeks ago, Siena College poll, 63% of New Yorkers support the SAFE Act, 32% oppose it. Upstate, different story, but still, 52% support, 45% oppose it. Do you think those numbers are wrong?
You know, I think if you polled prohibition at the time it was initially brought on, you'd probably see similar numbers. The fact that prohibition was adopted with public support and it was a constitutional amendment, so with all these states, two-thirds coming out in favor, that's great. You know what? Didn't work out either. 55-mile-an-hour speed limit. enacted with popular support. Everybody thought, oh, got to drive 55 on the thruway. How many people did that? You know, we've got a tradition in this country, and democracy is imperfect. Sometimes we make mistakes, but we've got a tradition of civil disobedience. Martin Luther King Jr. from Birmingham Jail wrote his famous letter where he said that citizens have not only a right but an obligation to oppose laws that they believe will undermine the tenets of American society. And I think that folks opposing the SAFE Act believe that it is doing exactly that. And it was passed as a political law. Everybody wants to prevent violence. The question is how to go about it. And what they would say is, let's look at mental illness. Let's look at the psychotropic drugs and their misdiagnosis or their misuse. And by looking at mental illness and its causes and its cures, start to address violence that way, not by posting laws that really will be ineffective.
We certainly can say, and for our callers, who we're going to have calls here, Bill, and they're going to have a chance to talk to you about what you've laid out here. But whether you support Bill's ideas or you oppose them, it is undeniably true that there are plenty of conservative voters who are upset about this and who are going to be upset in November. And the question is if they're going to organize. And Bill, you have pointed out that one of the challenges is making sure that they want to register and get to the polls. And Rob Astorino is going to have that challenge. Does he have a chance to get more of them to the polls?
Well, I don't know. We live in an interesting time in that I don't think New York State has ever seen the perfect storm of issues that might bring out single-issue voters like they do in this cycle. You've got the SAFE Act, which is of concern not only to conservatives. A lot of blue-collar liberals are also gun owners, recreational shooters, who are resentful of the way it was passed and its content. You've got a lot of teachers that are opposed to Common Core that would typically vote on the Democratic line. You've got a lot of parents, the so-called soccer moms, which, by the way, I think is a demeaning term, and I don't like it, but that's the way the education commissioners refer to them, who may or may not vote for one party or another, but are now galvanizing against the Common Core. So you've got these issues and a couple of others with single-issue constituencies. The question is, will they turn out? And I don't think anybody knows the answer to that. Obviously, Governor Cuomo is concerned. Last summer, he took $4 million out of the state Democratic Committee and devoted it solely to voter registration and get-out-the-vote efforts. So we know that Governor Cuomo is concerned about both the Anti-SAFE Act constituents, and I suspect he also has quite a few polling numbers about their opposition to Common Core. He brought Common Core to New York State. He has always supported Common Core. Now, though, he's saying, well, I'm against it. So before he was against it, he was for it. And I think that leaves a lot of folks confused. They're not going to forget we still have Common Core in New York. The kids are still taking the tests. The privacy issues are still out there and so on. And I think a lot of the parents and teachers are still going to be energized.
To the phones in a moment, two more quick points on this. When it comes to getting people to the polls, we know that a lot of conservative voters, especially conservative rural voters, are generally the kind of leave-me-alone types. They don't want government in their lives. And part of the problem then for Rob Astorino is, do they register? Are they there? Are they participating in November? What can you share from your experience with that demographic?
Yeah, that is a problem with the Republicans and the conservatives. By nature, they want to be left alone. A lot of libertarians, folks that just think that if you're not doing anything to anybody else, government shouldn't bother you. And that's why they're offended by things like the SAFE Act and Common Core. A lot of folks that like to sit at the kitchen table and help their kids with homework and can't do it anymore because Common Core effectively prevents those of us over the age of 25 from helping our own kids with homework. That is, again, this is unprecedented in New York State, and nobody knows where it's going to wind up. The Democrats, on the other hand, much more effective. I mean, give credit where credit's due. The Democratic Party has developed voter registration and get-out-the-vote efforts to an art form. You can witness Barack Obama's success in 2008 against Hillary Clinton in Democratic primaries or his successes in the general elections in both cycles. So whether the Republicans can even come close to matching that registration expertise, again, only time will tell. We've got 6 months to find out.
And finally on this issue, before we get to the phones, last week you talked about the rally. It was a rally a week ago in Albany, very well attended. Very passionate people who are opposed to the SAFE Act who were there. And one person who, I don't know if he was a Tom King whether he was there or not, he talked to the New York Daily News. He's the president of the State Rifle and Pistol Association, an NRA national board member. He told the New York Daily News he was not going to attend. Again, I don't know whether he did or not, but what he told the New York Daily News was he was not comfortable with the extreme rhetoric and images from this kind of rally. And at the rally, we saw a Cuomo doll hanged with a noose. We saw signs daring Cuomo to come and try to take the guns, implying that there would be violence if he did. Are you comfortable with those images?
No, I'm not comfortable with any of this. I would have liked to avoid even having to discuss any of these things. It is a terrible situation that we're in. The governor has painted himself into a corner with this statute that is not going to be complied with. I mean, I don't rely upon my estimates. The estimates of the law enforcement community are that you're going to have 90% noncompliance with the SAFE Act. That sets up a confrontation between government and the individuals that we talked about earlier in the show. I certainly don't want that. I don't think anybody in their right mind wants to see that. But it's a confrontation that has been set up. I mean, the pieces are in place. The governor needs to decide whether he wants to force that confrontation or whether he is willing to back off from it a little bit. It's sort of like those episodes from Happy Days. Remember when the Fonz would do something really boneheaded? And the whole humor of the episode was the various cast of characters trying to get the Fonz to admit he was wrong. And, of course, in the Happy Days episode, by the end of the episode, he says, "I was wrong," and everybody lives happily ever after. The question is, will Governor Cuomo sort of have the courage to say, "I was wrong about this," and thus back off from a confrontation with local law enforcement officers, with the county clerks, with ordinary citizens and judges and district attorneys, or will he continue to force the issue?
All right, Assemblyman Bill Nojay is here for the hour. Let's get Paul in Irondequoit. Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, I'd like to know what other are constitutional rights that the governor plans on revoking. If he just has this pen, this magic pen, and they have elected state officials that just take, I mean, he can reverse anything he wants at this point, as long as he gets backing. And the backing can be from anywhere. And it really bothers me. It really bothers me. And I don't plan on participating in any of this in New York State at all, registering guns or anything like that. I took my guns out of New York State. I've taken all my businesses out of New York State tonight. Everything. The only reason I'm here is because I can't get my wife to leave.
Thanks for the call, Paul. Bill, a quick response.
Well, unfortunately, a lot of folks are leaving New York State. In fact, just this morning, the U.S. Census Bureau released statistics from the Southern Tier that show our Southern Tier counties are continuing to hemorrhage citizens. You know, in my lifetime, I remember Walter Cronkite saying, newsflash, the American population has now hit 200 million. And just a couple of years ago, we hit 300 million. So you've had a 50% increase in the U.S. population in my lifetime. And yet, the population of New York State is decreasing throughout all of our upstate counties and statewide only holding fairly steady because of the influx of immigrants into New York City. So you've got a hemorrhaging of jobs, a loss of our manufacturing economy. All of our major industries are reducing their employment except for not-for-profits and education and government. New York State alone created one-third of all the new public jobs in the entire country last year. That's not healthy. It's not a sustainable economy. And what you're seeing are all sorts of warning signs about New York State becoming more and more the lack of competitiveness, being 50 out of 50 in terms of states and job creation, taxes, regulatory environment, and so on. You cannot sustain that here in upstate New York and expect that we're going to be able to maintain our roads and bridges, that we're going to be able to keep open our schools, that we're going to be able to do all the things that we've sort of become accustomed to. So, Paul, I understand your sentiments. And by the way, this SAFE, I think, is part of a much broader problem we've got in New York. For 200 years, we've had a rough equivalence, sort of like a fair fight between upstate interests and New York City interests. We've lost that in the last 30 years. In fact, even here in Rochester, the federal building is named after a fellow named Ken Keating. Well, Ken Keating became a United States Senator because Nelson Rockefeller recruited him. He was retired, former two-star general, successful private businessman, former congressman. And he said, "Why do you need me? I'm retired." And Rocky said, "I need balance in the ticket." And he wasn't referring to Democrat-Republican balance. He was referring to New York City upstate. He wanted an upstater. We lost that 30 years ago in New York State. And the consequence of that is the tax environment, the regulatory environment, the hostility to private business, and frankly to our culture, as symbolized by the SAFE Act, that is driving tens of thousands of New Yorkers out of state.
Now, on the issue of the Fonz, you brought up the Fonz. The end of every episode, he said, "I did something stupid." And everyone has just been trying to convince him, just admit you're wrong, you get it, okay, we all move on, we all sort of hug and move on. And you're implying that that's what the situation is with Cuomo. But the people who are trying to convince Cuomo he's done something wrong are carrying signs with him looking like Hitler, with a noose around his neck, things like that. And well, as much as you say you don't like it, do you condone that?
No, I don't condone it. And I never have. I've never supported that sort of thing. What I have observed is that you've got to put yourself in the shoes of the people that are frustrated and angry. We've had people arrested. In Niagara County, a 26-year-old was arrested, his life effectively ruined, because the Niagara County DA, we believe, acting at the request, or if not the control of Governor Cuomo, it would just pursue the prosecution of this young guy. He's married, he's got a family, his life is now ruined, and yet nobody seems to pay attention to the ruined lives caused by the governor's largely political laws. And it's sort of like, wait a minute now. You can get upset about people saying nasty things about the governor, but you're not going to get upset about a 26-year-old, a productive citizen with a wife and family whose life has been destroyed? That seems to be somewhat unequal treatment, and let's be fair to everybody. Rather than screaming and yelling, rather than passing laws that are not effective, and so you can get some press conferences and headlines in places like the New York Times, why don't we become more deliberate, more careful about the way we legislate? If we want to deal with violence and tragedy, let's look at how did these people get the guns? How can we prevent them from getting guns in the future? The mental illness, the underlying causes of this violence, and how to prevent those folks. The governor, by the way, is deinstitutionalizing the mentally ill, throwing thousands of these folks out on the street into our communities. At the same time, he is decrying violence. Those two things don't make sense. So let's back off of the politics and the screaming and the yelling and have a rational conversation about how to deal with these issues.
I see that we have Leah Barrett on the line. Leah is with New Yorkers Against Gun Violence, and I know she wanted to weigh in as well. Hello, Leah. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks very much for having me. Regarding the New York SAFE Act, I think we should discard the hyperbole we've been hearing from Representative Noje and look at the facts. First of all, New York SAFE has been ruled constitutional. Both federal and state courts have upheld the law despite attempts by the corporate gun lobby to block it. Judge William Scrutiny, who was appointed, after all, by first President George W. Herbert Walker Bush of the Federal District Court in Buffalo, he ruled at the end of last year. He cited that the New York SAFE Act is fully constitutional. It has a role in furthering the state's important interest in public safety because, after all, one of the government's key functions is to protect public safety. So it's been ruled constitutional. Get over it. Secondly, as you've heard earlier, New York voters support the law by a 2-to-1 majority, according to the latest Siena College poll. Third, the law is working to keep guns out of the wrong hands. Many individuals have been charged under the law. 31 individuals have been charged with criminal purchase or disposal of a weapon, including straw purchases. That means buying a gun and giving it to someone who can't legally possess it. And the SAFE Act elevated this from a misdemeanor to a Class D felony. 20 people have been charged with possessing a loaded gun when committing another crime, either a violent felony offense or drug trafficking felony. And also, you've had 31 people charged with possession of a weapon on school grounds, which the SAFE Act has elevated from a misdemeanor to a Class C felony. And if you look at the numbers of people being shot in the state in 2013 compared to 2012, well, guess what? There's a 4.5% reduction, 828 versus 867 being shot. So it's had an impact in reducing the numbers of people being shot. Fifth, thanks to our strong gun safety laws, New York has the fourth lowest gun death rate in the nation, which is notable given we're a state of 20 million people and New York City gets a lot of visitors in the whole state, 80 million visitors every year.
Leah, you're giving us a lot to chew on, and I do want you to stay.
I hope so.
Well, I do want you to stay there, but I do also want to give Assemblyman Noje a chance to weigh in on some of that. Go ahead, Bill.
No, look, folks have been going back and forth with statistics. Books have been written, numerous scholarly articles on both sides of the issue, and I don't think that the statistics or the arguments are going to be resolved today or at any time in the near future. This is an argument that's been going on for a long, long time in America and in other places around the world. People have different opinions. I'm not persuaded by opinion polls because we don't live in a democracy. We live in a republic. In fact, it's sometimes noted that democracy is two wolves and a lamb deciding what to have for dinner, whereas a republic is when the lamb owns a gun. We have always protected minority rights in this country or aspired to do that. And in this case, if folks in New York City and Long Island want to have gun control and want to elect folks to do that, that's fine. I mean, they can do what they want to do. I think the point that we're trying to make is that New York State is not a homogeneous state. We are a state of regions, and the regions vary tremendously in terms of what's appropriate, in terms of their culture and their law enforcement history and so on. We are a safe state. I think going back to Rudy Giuliani, he did a tremendous job in selecting police commissioners, and Michael Bloomberg did the same. Crime, I understand, is now rising in the last few months in New York City, but that might just be a temporary phenomenon. We'll have to wait and see. But clearly, law enforcement practices are important. Community policing, the kinds of things that Rudy did in New York City, turned the corner. I lived in New York City for 5 years. So you can argue this on both sides for a long time and probably not get much further than you're going to get. It ultimately comes down to whether we are going to respect the wishes of community. It's a home rule issue in many respects. Certainly, I would argue on one point, which is if there was even one thing in the SAFE Act that I thought was actually going to prevent a violent crime, then I would support it. I absolutely would support it. But when you've got even the Obama administration saying they won't comply with it, you got a problem. And I think if the governor steps back and takes a look at what you folks drafted for him, in the Brady campaign and New Yorkers Against Gun Violence, the Bloomberg people, they are the folks who actually drafted the SAFE Act. And I'm not sure that any member of the legislature read it before they voted upon it. Certainly not those that voted in favor of it. And what we've got now is a law that was poorly conceived and poorly drafted and, at the end of the day, not workable.
Leah, I'm late for a break, but go ahead and respond there.
Well, you know, that, I don't know where to start. There's so many falsehoods in that statement. The elements of the SAFE Act were bills that have been kicking around Albany for years. They were not written as much as we would like to think they were by Brady or Bloomberg or New Yorkers Against Gun Violence. They were written by legislators, and many of them were written
you're
with
wrong
the
about
assistance
that. No,
of
no.
law enforcement
I'm gonna,
officials.
I'm going to interrupt you. No, I will, because you just said something that was flat
out
wrong.
Hold on. Let the guy who runs the show do one thing here. And I don't care how late we're going to be for a break. Leah, just pause for a second. Bill, she's saying that it was written by legislators.
Not true.
Who wrote
it?
Not true.
The governor's office was given a text of the bill by the anti-Second Amendment crowd out of New York City, Michael Bloomberg's organizations. They delivered it to the governor's office. The governor's office massaged it around and delivered it literally on the first day of the legislative session. The legislators never saw it in the state Senate until 45 minutes before they voted upon it.
Were there components that had been kicking around for a long time?
Absolutely.
The anti-Second Amendment crowd, their goal is to ban private ownership of firearms. The governor himself used the confiscation word in a radio interview in Albany during this whole debate. So we know what their goals are, and they have different means of reaching those goals. They've been talking about them for decades. Micro-stamping is the next thing up on the agenda. I can guarantee you that. Micro-stamping will be the next item they start talking about, along with insurance requirements, storage requirements, all under the guise of preventing violence. I challenge the caller to tell me one provision of the SAFE Act that will actually prevent in Aurora, Colorado, or a West Webster, or a Sandy Hook from occurring. One provision of it.
Go ahead,
Leah. There's nothing there.
Go ahead, Leah.
There are several. I mean, where do I start? Okay, look. Tell me what you don't like. Are you, for example, against banning military-style assault weapons whose only purpose is to kill large numbers of people as quickly as possible, as you saw in Newtown? Do you disagree with requiring criminal background checks on gun sales to keep guns out of the hands of felons, domestic abusers, and the seriously mentally ill? Do you think it's a bad idea or a bad law because it makes the murder of a first responder a Class A1 felony? Are you against imposing tougher penalties on those who use illegal guns? All of these are provisions of the New York SAFE Act, and they're all going to deter gun crime guns and keep guns out of the wrong hands and reduce the death and injury we see every single year.
Why do you think that? See, this is where I'm losing.
Let me give you one little piece of data which you'll find very interesting. Missouri had a law which they repealed in 2007, which required background checks on all gun sales. The state legislature repealed this. Guess what happened? From 2008 to 12, gun murder rates went up 23%, which was 55 to 65 additional gun deaths per year after Missouri repealed that background check law. What that meant is that people were getting their hands on guns through straw purchases because they were not having to undergo background checks, criminal background checks, which actually do work in keeping guns from the wrong hands.
Bill, do you disagree with background checks?
Let's take Wes Webster, since that's been cited. The killer in West Webster, who killed the two firefighters, had previously taken a hammer and killed his grandmother by smashing her in the head.
The elevation to a felony was not going to change that.
Well, would anything in the SAFE Act have changed what he did to kill the two volunteers? The answer is no.
You're picking one case.
Well, pick any of the cases.
But I don't disagree with that. That was
Sandy
not going to change that.
Sandy Hook Elementary School in Connecticut. He killed his own mother, again, with a firearm that she had in the house. Would anything in the SAFE Act have changed that?
I think part of Leah's question, Bill, is she referred to these assault rifles as the purpose of being able to kill as many people as possible in a short amount of time.
That is simply not true.
Okay, I understand. But tell me what a semi-automatic rifle, and I'm not being provocative here. Give me the honest answer. Whether it's pick any sort of firearm that has high-capacity magazines, et cetera. What's the purpose?
What's the purpose of a firearm? You can use a firearm for sporting purposes. You've got people that use them for hunting. Although, as the governor incorrectly pointed out, you don't need 10 bullets to kill a deer. In fact, it's already illegal in New York State to use 10 rounds in a magazine for hunting. So, I mean, the demagoguery and the setting up of straw men only gets you so far. It works with people who don't understand firearms or the sporting industries, but it does not work with people that are actually shooters and understand how these weapons are designed. We have already got now weapons in New York State designed to do an end run around the SAFE Act.
When people hear,
they have the same functionality as the weapons that are banned. They are just as deadly, but they're legal in New York. How far do you want to go in government crafting laws to say you can do this, you can't do that, when in fact the criminals aren't going to pay any attention to any of them?
Now, but understand here, I'm trying to represent the questions for a lot of people who have genuine concerns. And I think a lot of people who are pro-SAFE Act who don't own guns, hear you say that a high-capacity magazine, semi-automatic rifle, the kind used in Sandy Hook or wherever, when you say it's used for sporting purposes, people will say, you know what, you should not be allowed to use that for sports. You know what, find another sport is what some people would say, Bill.
Well, okay, that's great. Somebody thinks I should find a different sport.
Because of the danger involved in that being used for not sporting purposes.
But hold on. This is, again, setting up straw men and doing false arguments is very effective with low-information voters. But let's look at facts. A firearm in the hands of a trained shooter is not going to be dangerous to anybody, okay? So it's just a tool. On the other hand, if somebody is mentally ill, as we found out 2 days ago in Pennsylvania, if they don't have a gun, they're going to use a knife. If they don't have a knife, they're going to use a car or a truck. A mentally deranged individual is going to find a way to commit the crime.
I don't want to do the Pittsburgh thing, but how many people died in Pittsburgh, Bill? How many people who were stabbed died?
Well,
how many people would have died if it was a gun?
Are we saying that because they didn't die? I'm not following the logic.
See, I feel like I'm being – the logic is – and I'm going to lose my job if I don't get to a break soon. The logic is that if you stab 20 people and 20 have stab wounds and they all live, or you shoot 20 people and 18 of them die, there's a difference.
Yeah, but I can't believe we're having a discussion about whether it's less bad to stab some 20 people than to shoot them. Look at – we've got a problem with mental illness. We are releasing tens of thousands of the mentally ill under the policy of deinstitutionalization and trying to save money out onto our streets. We are going to have consequences for doing that. Whether they use a gun or a knife or a car or something else, we are going to have bad – and we're seeing those bad consequences.
Leah, last point to you. Bill, I think Bill's right when he says, you pointed to Wes Webster. unfortunately, that was going to happen whether it was a felony or not. That's not going to save lives. That's going to change the penalty for people who commit those crimes. The question is actually stopping those crimes. So I don't think Bill is disingenuous when he says he doesn't think it's going to work, nor do I think you're disingenuous when you think that it will work. And, you know, I'm just trying
We know that background checks work. Even NRA members are in favor of background checks. 90% of American people are. And we have the data to support the fact that millions of individuals have been prevented from buying guns who shouldn't have them. So the fact we have universal background checks in New York State is a good thing. Now we just wish Congress would wake up and follow New York's lead to give some of the same basic protections to keep all Americans free from gun violence. And look, the New York Safe Act is a law of the state of New York. It's being implemented. It's being enforced as we speak. But as long as New Yorkers continue to die from gun violence as they do, there's more that we can do to encourage responsible gun ownership and use. And that's really all that this is about. You know, no guns are being taken away from anybody. Law-abiding citizens can keep their guns. We've had pistol registration for years. In 1911, we had the Sullivan Laws that were passed, which required New Yorkers to have licenses in order to possess firearms small enough to be concealed. Come on, gun laws are as old as this nation. In the 19th century, some states passed laws that criminalized the carrying or brandishing, even displaying guns.
All right.
This is just, New York Safe Act is actually moderate when you look at in the context of the history of American gun laws. And the objective is to prevent gun death and injury, and it will accomplish that.
Leah, I do appreciate you taking the time, and I know we're short and I've got to get to a break. But thank you very much. We'll talk to you soon. If you're on hold, you know, the whole purpose of having Bill here was to do what we did with Joe. Talk about the budget, talk about other things. Look what you've done to my hour, Bill. I have to take a shortest break in radio just to preserve my own job. We'll come right back and we'll keep the conversation going. And if you're on hold, we will try to get to you. This is Connections on member-supported public radio. Welcome back to Connections, and let's get to the phones. I want to bring in John in the city. John, thanks for calling Connections.
Thanks, Evan. Thanks, Bill. Bill, on the budget, I got 3 points to make regarding the budget. Number one, we've got supposedly $8 billion from the federal government for Sandy funds. Number two, the Northeast Greenhouse Coalition, which New York State participates in, has a fund, supposedly, that's set aside for environmental issues. And number three, either it's our state unemployment insurance, supposedly in a lockbox. Now, all three of those things, do they get intermingled in the budget so there's no accountability? Is that... Is the budget of $140 billion deceiving because that $8 billion just from Sandy, is that being accounted for in that budget, or are they commingling everything, two other items I mentioned?
Yeah, the general fund is the big pot of funds, and it's always frustrating to voters and taxpayers, especially when they see New York State take money that's supposed to be in segregated funds and, in fact, commingle them. And the biggest example of this is the New York State Lottery. When it was instituted, it was all about education. It's all for the kids. Well, what'd they do? They took the lottery money and threw it into a big pot of the general fund, and how much is actually used for education is completely disconnected from the amount of money that the lottery raises. Similarly, sportsman's licenses, hunting and fishing licenses, supposed to be used to preserve for conservation projects and whatnot, and it's not. We've got a long history in New York State of whether it be raising money through taxation or lotteries or bond acts, and then just throwing the money into the general fund and spending it how the governor and the legislature see fit.
Well, as an employer, we've been contributing, I think, since last year, extra unemployment insurance.
Right.
And I'm getting kind of ticked off in that these funds should be put in a lockbox or something.
And, yeah.
And apparently they're not. Is that violating
any
ethics on in Albany?
Look, first of all, some of these things that I just referred to violate the contractual commitments that we've got from bondholders. In the case of unemployment, we've got big problems with both unemployment and workman's comp in New York State. Governor Spitzer tried to claim to have fixed them in early 2007. Didn't work. And we've still got the highest rates in the country, and that's killing us in terms of job creation and competitiveness. And no, the answer is that we have so bungled unemployment insurance in New York State compared with our competing states that we've got some companies shutting down and moving out of state because the unemployment, the workman's comp, the taxes, and so on. And for small business people like yourself, I'm sure you've got a lot of headaches generated by New York State government. This is just one of them. The problem is this can be real numbers, as you know. If you've got 10, even 20 employees, those numbers can get big enough to put you out of business.
I know we're going to get back to the phones in a second because I know people want to talk about the SAFE Act. Let's hit a couple of – we're going to go real quick on a few other issues here. First of all, the governor wanted a more aggressive public campaign financing. He isn't really getting his way there, and I assume that you did not agree with his
views there. No, because you know what? The public financing of campaigns is very similar to the SAFE Act. There's one stated purpose, but if you actually read the law, it doesn't accomplish those goals. Tell me how – throwing taxpayer money into campaigns eases the corruption that's endemic to Albany. The only thing that's going to ease the corruption or reduce the corruption in Albany is to reduce the amount of money sloshing around coming out of special interests. I have always supported that. Unfortunately, the governor's proposal doesn't accomplish that. And to the contrary, if you look at how these goofballs in New York City spend their money, they go on conferences, vacations to warm climates, like Puerto Rico. They stay at luxury resorts. They play lots of rounds of golf. They eat nice food and drink a lot of wine and other things. They want that to be paid for by taxpayers because that, under current law, can all be paid for out of campaign accounts. Well, taxpayer money goes into campaign accounts. Guess who's paying for the vacations to Puerto Rico? That kind of stuff is why citizens are so losing confidence in government. And I'm glad that the campaign finance reform didn't go through. If, on the other hand, you craft a real campaign reform bill, I will support that. But that was not what the governor put on the table.
Tax rebate checks are coming in October. It sure looks like a gimmick when the state is sending checks back to voters a few weeks before an election. Is that too cynical of you?
No, it's perfectly accurate. It's a gimmick. The governor's economic development program is one gimmick after another. We haven't created any significant number of jobs, and we're still hemorrhaging more jobs than we're creating in New York, which is why we're at the very bottom of the barrel in terms of economic competitiveness with our fellow states.
What about manufacturers' franchise tax? That's going to zero upstate. There was a lot of talk about that.
Look, the Empire Center and the Tax Foundation based in Washington, which is bipartisan, they rate all 50 states, some run by Republicans, some by Democrats, did a study. The governor in this mutual admiration society that he's got going right now with the leaders of the legislature said, well, we reduced taxes by over $1 billion in this budget. You know what? We are 50th out of 50 in the states. After that $1 billion of tax reduction comes in, we're still 50th out of 50. In fact, an analysis by the Tax Foundation shows that you would have to do 20 times the amount of tax reduction. You have over $20 billion tax reduction in order to put New York State in the middle of the pack of states. In the middle, not the top, in the middle. Just to beat states like California, you would have to do 9 times more tax reduction than we did. So before we do this orgy of self-congratulation with the governor and the legislature, let's deal again with facts. The fact is, yeah, they cut $1 billion. That is a mere drop in the bucket of what we're going to have to do to get off the bottom of the barrel of rankings in terms of competitiveness.
On Common Core yesterday, Joe Morelli said that while student scores are not going to count for the recent Common Core testing, teachers could be evaluated using the test. He says that doesn't line up. It's unfair to teachers. And he says the legislature will take that up to protect teachers. Do you agree with that?
The governor brought Common Core into New York State because he wanted the $700 million being dangled in front of him by the Obama administration. It has proven a disaster. The rollout was a disaster. It's a disaster for parents. It's a disaster for students. I've got relatives that are teachers in schools here in upstate New York. They hate Common Core because it scripts them. It does not allow them to compensate with kids that are a little bit slower.
The legislature going to do anything about it? Can you?
The legislature tried to do something about it. The Republicans in the legislature tried to get rid of it. But the education lobby and ultimately the teachers' unions, notwithstanding the professional wrestling going on at the top level saying that they're opposed to it, the fact is they want it. And they have done everything they can to both get it enacted originally and now to preserve it. The governor is backpedaling because he realizes it's not very popular. And going back to your original question about this fall's election, he realizes that if you take the teachers, the classroom educators, and the parents alone, seeing what he did to them with Common Core, that in itself is a huge potential single-issue voting block that's very problematic for the governor's prospects.
We're going to try to go quickly. Bernard Fairport, go.
Yeah, my question is, it seems to me that what we're saying here is that, first of all, laws are passed by politics and elections. So that's point number one. Number two, are you saying that if the police don't believe in a law, they're not required to enforce it? And do we basically say that if we don't believe in what the government does for us, it's okay for us to simply walk away from it? Aren't we kind of required to pay attention to the basic principle of democracy?
All right, let's let Bill jump in. Yeah. Yeah. No, thank you, Bernard.
I hear you. Let me answer with two things. First of all, I didn't say that law enforcement should or shouldn't do anything. I mean, I've not spoken those words. What I said was they are now deeply conflicted. If you just look at what the sheriffs are saying, again, don't listen to me. I'm just quoting others. And what the others are saying, law enforcement officers are saying, is that the SAFE Act puts them in a very, very difficult position because it's a law that they know will have no impact upon crime or violence, and yet they're being asked to enforce it because they know the governor has political goals. The second thing, and I think just as important, maybe even more important, we're seeing with a very distroubling frequency our elected leaders, whether it be Barack Obama ignoring provisions of Obamacare and saying, well, you can have more time even though the law doesn't allow it, or Andrew Cuomo, as Evan's colleagues in Albany, the journalists, will tell you, Andrew Cuomo routinely ignores Freedom of Information Act requests, other things that he just finds inconvenient. When the leadership of our government says, or by their actions—
He's not the only one, but yes.
And it is not the only one. And any leader— Of any level does not respect the law, the message that sends down through the ranks, whether it be of law enforcement or other elected officials or ordinary citizens, is not a good one. We are a nation built of laws, and we need to respect the laws. The troublesome thing begins when the laws are so dysfunctional and so disingenuous that ordinary citizens or their elected representatives at the county level or town say, look, what are we supposed to do with this? And that's the situation we've got now with the SAFE Act.
If you're on the line, I feel terrible that we couldn't get to everybody, but this is just the nature of the hour. And, Bill, what we've seen was with Common Core, with SAFE Act, there's passion on these issues. That may be what becomes the hinge point for this fall's election. And I think that Rob Astorino is probably happy to hear that.
It's going to be an interesting 6 months. Thank you for having me, Evan.
Well, thank you, Bill. Bill Nojay, Assemblyman Bill Nojay, today for the hour. And given that we didn't even get to everything we want to talk to, we'll bring him back here soon. And you stay with us if you could. We're talking about middle skills jobs, what they are and what they really mean next hour on Connections.